following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs. Will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen was sentenced to 3 years in prison. Now, a little tip for Mr. Cohen. First day in prison, you walk right up to the biggest guy in the yard, you pay him $130,000. Poor Cohen climbed up onto the prison bus. He made sure to throw Trump under it. Telling the court, recently the president tweeted a statement calling me weak, and it was correct, but for a much different reason than he was implying. It was because time and time again, I felt it was my duty to cover up his dirty deeds. And evidently, you suck at it. Here's the thing. But anyway, there you have it. Right there from Cohen, Trump did dirty deeds, who I believe was Stormy Daniels' co-star. Now, Cohen bared his tortured soul, saying, my weakness can be characterized as a blind loyalty to Donald Trump. Yes, his only real crime was being loyal to Donald Trump, which we now know is a felony. Cohen went on to say, it was that sense of loyalty that led me to choose a path of darkness over light. Yes, he chose darkness over light, and I believe we have a footage of the moment that Donald Trump hired him.
Join me, Michael, and pay off the porn star that spanked me.
But Cohen, crossroads. Cohen, chief fan. Good news is Cohen isn't under Trump's teeny tiny thumb anymore. Telling the court, this may seem hard to believe, but today is one of the most meaningful days of my life. I have been living in a personal and mental incarceration ever since the fateful day that I accepted the offer to work for a real estate mogul whose business acumen that I deeply admired. Oh, I thought you worked for Donald Trump. Oh, okay. That's what you mean. I didn't know. I figured it was like mogul. I didn't. Okay. Admired. Okay, great. That's how bad working for Donald Trump is. Michael Cohen is happy to trade metaphor jail for jail. He went on rather poetically, the irony is today is the day I am getting my freedom back. Actually, the irony is that while you're in prison for your crimes, the guy who ordered you to do the crimes will be at Mar-a-Lago sharing chocolate cake with Xi Jinping and Kid Rock.
There you go. Stephen Colbert on a roll these days because, well, he's got good material to work with. Welcome to a Thursday, everyone. It is Howie Kine Day, and Howie will be along. A lot to talk about today. In fact, there's a lot going on, but I got to start by sharing a very weird news story that I just saw, a breaking news report that dozens of bomb threats, many of them sent by email, are being reported at news outlets, government buildings, banks, libraries, and other businesses across the U.S., according to various local media and police departments. Several police departments say many are hoaxes but are being taken seriously as precautions. I just saw a tweet from NBC San Francisco that said they were investigating a couple of bomb threats. I mean, this is happening around the country today, all of a sudden out of nowhere. And what's really weird is about an hour ago, I got an email And it reminded me of those old, you know, some Nigerian prince has billions of dollars that they left to you, you know, those emails. This one, I won't read the whole thing, but it says, "Hello, there is bomb tetrol in the building where your business is located." My business is located in my house. I really doubt there's a bomb in here. Anyway, it's a woman, Stella something or other. It says, "My mercenary built the bomb under my direction. It can be hidden anywhere because of its small size. It is not able to damage the building structure, but if it detonates, you will get many victims. My man is watching the situation around the building. If he sees any suspicious behavior or emergency, he can power the bomb, or he will power the bomb. They're asking for 20, oh, here. I can withdraw my man if you pay $20,000 is the value of your life in business. Good to know. Pay it to me in Bitcoin and I assure that I have to call off my man and explosive will not explode. But do not try to cheat. My guarantee will become actual only after 3 confirmations in blockchain." Whatever the fuck that means. And then there's a Bitcoin address. Welcome to 2018. I just think it's kind of fishy and a bit coincidental, perhaps, that this is happening all around the country. And I got one of these emails today. Oh, I love this one. Down towards the bottom, it's a fairly lengthy email. It says, "This is just a business. If I do not see the money and the explosive device explodes, other companies will pay me a lot more because this is not an isolated incident. To stay anonymous," spelled with an A, or spelled with an I instead of a Y, "I will not visit this email account. I check my wallet every 20 minutes, and if I see the bitcoins, I will give the command to my mercenary to leave your district. If the explosive device explodes and the authorities read this email, we aren't a terrorist society and don't take any responsibility for explosions in other buildings. I know I'm giving this more time than it deserves. And frankly, if I hadn't seen this news story, this breaking news story about dozens of bomb threats, many of them sent by email or being reported all around the country, and there many are hoaxes, but they're being taken seriously as precautions, this is frightening. I wonder if it's the same email. If anybody in the government or, you know, police is listening and want this email, I didn't delete it, so I can send it to you. Just a bit of weirdness to start off the show today. And frankly, it's a weird day with lots of news to report. And so we'll get to what's news in just a moment. It is Thursday, so Howie Klein will be along. And one of the things we're going to talk about is a story that I have in What's News today about a provision, a new rule that was added on to the House vote on, well, you know what, rather than tell you right now, I should probably just start What's News and get to it in the course of things, because there's a lot of stuff to report on today. So let's just get to it, shall we?
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
And yes, we'll do it live.
We'll do it live. Fucking thing.
I said we'd do it live.
We'll do it live.
Okay. We'll do it live.
I'll write it and we'll
do
it live.
No, I wrote it and we'll do it live. I know I used this joke yesterday, but nobody even commented on it. I thought it was so funny. Anyway. Sorry about that. Anyway, the news. Donald Trump's former personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, you know, was sentenced to 3 years in prison after pleading guilty to lying to Congress and violating campaign finance laws. Cohen told the judge, quote, "I take full responsibility for each act that I pled guilty to, the personal ones to me, and those involving the president of the United States." Responding to a Trump tweet calling him weak, Cohen said he was weak because, quote, "time and time again, I felt it was my duty to cover up his dirty deeds." If you're hearing AC/DC playing in your head, you know, I apologize. The president himself was uncharacteristically quiet about these new developments until this morning. You knew that Trump couldn't keep quiet for too long. He took to Twitter, demeaning Michael Cohen and stating, "I never directed Michael Cohen to break the law." Meanwhile, and I love going to Fox when, you know, they tell the truth. Their legal analyst, Judge Anthony Napolitano, told Shepard Smith that the president committed a felony.
"We've learned that federal prosecutors here in New York City, not Bob Mueller and his team in Washington, D.C., career prosecutors here in New York City, have evidence that the president of the United States committed a felony by ordering and paying Michael Cohen to break the law. How do we know that? They told that to the federal judge.
Uh-oh.
Under the rules, they can't tell that to a federal judge unless they actually have that hardcore evidence. Under the rules, they can't tell that to a federal judge unless they intend to do something with that evidence. The U.S. attorney in Manhattan, a Donald Trump appointee, taking a page from Jeff Sessions' book, recused himself, leaving this case in the hands of the full-time career professional prosecutors. They are the ones who prosecuted Michael Cohen. They are the ones who told the federal judge that Donald Trump orchestrated these unlawful payments. They are the ones who made the agreement with AMI, the parent company of the National Enquirer, which ties a bow on all of this.
Whoa.
Which connects the dots between the payments to the two women who alleged to claim they had intimate relationships with the president. And the line running through all that is the president himself.
Wow.
Prosecutors have told us through these filings that they have evidence that the president committed a felony.
The felony is paying Michael Cohen to commit a felony. It's pretty basic. A hires B to shoot someone. A is as liable as if he had pulled the trigger. You pay someone to commit a crime, they commit the crime, you are liable, criminally liable, for their commission of that crime as well as their being liable. That's what the prosecutors told the federal judge.
That, again, was Judge Napolitano on Fox, you know, who's usually the harbinger of doom and gloom. I you know, there's such a difference, so I'm told, because I don't watch Fox, but their daytime programming is wholly different from their nighttime propaganda shows, you know, state-run TV. Maybe some of those, like Laura Ingraham or Sean Insanity, should have Napolitano on so he can explain to them how Trump is a felon. Anyway, there was other news today. The U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York announced that it has reached a non-prosecution agreement with AMI, the parent company. Well, this happened yesterday. Parent company of the National Enquirer, in connection with their $150,000 payment to former Playboy model Karen McDougal before the 2016 elections. MSNBC has the details.
They acknowledge that they met the payment in concert with a candidate's presidential campaign. Of course, that's President Donald Trump. And in order to ensure that the woman did not publicize damaging allegations about the candidate before the 2016 presidential election. This next sentence is important and is going to be significant. AMI further admitted that its principal purpose in making the payment was to suppress the woman's story so as to prevent it from influencing the election. That means that AMI is now saying that it made this payment in order to not influence the election. Up until this point, it'd been a little bit of a he said, he said with respect to Michael Cohen and the president. And now, instead of just Michael Cohen saying, hey, I made this not to influence an election, because the president has stated that this was a private settlement, which, of course, would be completely legal, as Pete Williams has pointed out several times today. But this changes things, because now it's American media that's also saying that this payment was made not to influence an election. And I'll just continue that says that the agreement also acknowledges, among other things, AMI's acceptance of responsibility. And they note that AMI's role in assisting the investigation was significant as well.
This is not good for Donald Trump. Just saying, I wanted to put an extra spotlight on this story because this really shows Donald Trump is in deep shit, and that's good. And Robert Hill in the chat room says, here's the really fun part, kids. Rachel Maddow last night pointed out that the illegal payments signed by the adult Trump kids also make them liable. Oh, I just can't wait for the Trump family perp walk. Wonder if they'll get like a family cell. Anyway, there was news today as alleged Russian spy Maria Butina pleaded guilty in federal court for conspiracy to act as an illegal foreign agent in the United States. Butina, 30, was accused of working to infiltrate Republican political circles through, well, groups like the National Rifle Association to bolster Russian interests. She said she acted under the direction of a Russian official whom CNN has identified as Alexander Torshin. Butina sought to establish unofficial lines of communication with Americans having power and influence over politics. That's what the prosecutor said in court. She faces a maximum of 5 years in prison, although their authorities are saying it's more likely, you know, 0 to 6 months, which would mean time served by the time she's actually sentenced, and she'll likely be deported after serving any time. And then when she gets back to Russia, she'll either be hailed as a hero or killed. You know, it's one or the other. Theresa May lives on as British Prime Minister. We talked about it yesterday that she was facing a no confidence vote in Parliament. Well, she survived it, meaning that she keeps her job and the Brexit headache that goes along with it. Today, she heads to Brussels for a summit with EU leaders where she can try to renegotiate the Brexit deal that she can't get through her own parliament. If the EU still refuses to rework it, the prospect of the so-called no-deal Brexit becomes much more likely. That scenario in which the UK leaves the EU in March without a trade deal is scaring people because of its predicted food shortages, grounded flights, and other economic calamities. May also told everyone that she will not stand for election again, that she will step down before the next election. Again, stay tuned. I a lot of people over there, we had Dennis Campbell on from UK Progressive a couple of weeks ago, talking about this stuff. And a lot of people are wanting a new referendum on Brexit. And there are, I don't think there's any proof. I don't know if they've done an investigation like have been done here. But there are suspicions that there was foreign interference in their election process. Gee, where have I heard that before? Well, the House of Representatives was busy yesterday. In a narrow 206 to 203 vote, the House passed a rule added at the last minute to the Agriculture Improvement Act of 2018 that's more commonly known as the Farm Bill. In the rule is a provision that would prevent a floor vote on any war powers resolution limiting the U.S. involvement in Yemen for the rest of the year through the end of the 115th Congress. The rule was added by Paul Ryan as one of his final acts as Speaker, and it reads thusly: the provisions of Section 7 of the War Powers Resolution shall not apply during the remainder of the 115th Congress to a concurrent resolution introduced pursuant to Section 5 of the War Powers Resolution with respect to Yemen. Again, speaking English, it would preclude them doing anything to limit our participation in Saudi Arabia's war in Yemen. It should be noted, and this was what I was talking about at the top that we're going to discuss with Howie Klein, five House Democrats voted with the Republicans to continue this war in Yemen. Jim Costa, Al Lawson, Colin Peterson, Dutch Rupperberger, and David Scott. Meanwhile, 17 Republicans crossed over to vote no once this Yemen provision was added. By the way, the final vote on the overall bill was 369 to 47. So the Farm Bill passed overwhelmingly. Those five so-called Democrats could have easily voted no on that rule and yes on the final bill, but they didn't. Again, we'll talk with Howie Klein about it when he joins us a little later in the hour. Meanwhile, the Senate today will vote on a resolution introduced by Bernie Sanders, Chris Murphy, and Mike Lee demanding an end to U.S. military support for Saudi Arabia's ongoing war in Yemen. Bernie Sanders hit Facebook Live an hour or two ago to explain what's happening today.
Yesterday was a very important day forward in trying to end this horrific war in Yemen, and for the first time in 45 years, use the War Powers Act to actually end U.S. participation in a war. It never happened before. And yesterday we got 60 votes to proceed.
Wow.
Which is 9 votes more than we needed, and that's a good thing. We picked up some good Republican support. And we also, with some 95 votes, were able to get what we call a germaneness amendment, which limits the scope of debate. So we're making some progress. Today what we have are a number of amendments that are going to be offered. Two of them essentially will try to undermine everything that we are trying to do, and they're being offered by Senator Cotton, one of the more hawkish and conservative members of the Senate. But we are making progress in addressing an issue that I hope everybody understands is the great humanitarian crisis facing the world right now. And that is within this poor country of Yemen, as a result of the Saudi-led intervention in that war 3 years ago. We now have seen 85,000 children starved to death.
Wow.
Starved to death.
Wow.
And the United Nations tells us that millions more face imminent starvation. 10,000 cases of cholera are developing every week because the Saudis have destroyed the water infrastructure in Yemen, and it is impossible for many people to get clean drinking water. The economy is completely in shambles, and even if there would be food available, people don't have the money to buy that food. So what has been going on for years now is the United States has been working with the Saudis in this horrific war. And what this resolution says, again, for the first time since the War Powers Act was passed in 1973, it makes it very clear that the Congress is finally asserting its constitutional responsibility and telling the president that this war is unauthorized. It's unconstitutional.
And thank you, Bernie Sanders. Just had to get that out there because he's walking the walk, or walking the talk, however that old saying goes. By the way, while Bernie was playing there, I get these news alerts from CNN that pop up on my screen, and I just got one that says, here, I clicked on it, and the headline, bomb threats emailed to multiple locations across the country. This is happening. Dozens of institutions across the country received email threats Thursday afternoon, causing evacuations and sweeps of buildings. I'm dying to know if it's the same email I got. They're saying at Penn State University, police in conjunction with the FBI are investigating a message received by individuals in multiple locations on campus and across the state. Police say this does not appear to be a legitimate threat. However, an investigation is ongoing. I think that's my email. Anyway, just thought I'd share that with you because it's weird. And I do hope it's just, you know, somebody fucking with us. This was bound to happen. The rate of gun deaths in the U.S. has hit its highest level in more than 20 years, with almost 40,000 people killed in shootings in 2017, this according to new government figures. The numbers from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention show 39,773 people in the U.S. lost their lives after being shot or shooting themselves in 2017. That's insane. That represents a total of 12 deaths per 100,000 people, up from 10.1 in 2010, and the highest rate since 1996. Of course, last year also saw the deadliest mass shooting by an individual to take place in modern U.S. history, when 58 people died in a massacre on the Las Vegas Strip. By the way, tomorrow marks the sixth anniversary of the Sandy Hook Elementary shooting, where a gunman fatally shot 20 first graders and six adult staff members. And now is a good time to point out that not one piece of national legislation has been passed to expand background checks or to safeguard the American people against something like this happening again. Not one. Not one. In its annual study, the Committee to Protect Journalists reports that a near record number of journalists around the world are behind bars for their work. As of December 1st, 251 journalists are in jail for doing their jobs. The number of journalists imprisoned on charges of false news rose to 28, up from 21 last year and 9 in 2016, according to the CPJ. The report criticized Donald Trump for frequently characterizing negative media coverage as fake news, a phrase that is also now being used by leaders against their critics in countries like the Philippines and Turkey. Gee, I wonder where they got that from. In a somewhat related story, and in typical Trump fashion, the president has reportedly killed a decades-long tradition by canceling the annual White House Christmas party for members of the media. Yeah, I don't know why anyone would want to go to a Christmas party at the Trump's White House, but it's just one more thing, one more norm that this asshole in the Oval Office is upending. And finally, just because I can report it, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has announced its 2019 inductees. And this year's class includes The Cure, Janet Jackson, Stevie Nicks, Radiohead, Roxy Music, The Zombies, and Def Leppard. Really, Def Leppard? I know music. It's a thing of personal taste, but Def Leppard? I get most of the other ones, though. I could do without Janet Jackson, but I get her. No appeal. All right. And that's a look at what's news for today. More later. We'll speak with Howie Klein in a few minutes, but first we'll check in with Brad and Desi for the latest Green News Report. It's Nicole Sandler Show at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
It's Thursday, December 13, 2018.
The Arctic is experiencing the most unprecedented transition in human history.
Very bad news in the latest Arctic report card. Cole State Democratic Senator gets top Energy Committee position. Washington State Governor unveils ambitious climate change legislation. Plus,
I want the cleanest air and the cleanest water on the planet. I want crystal clean water.
Trump EPA rolls back yet another major water protection rule.
All of those rollbacks and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
When you look at China and when you look at other countries where they have very, foul air. They have not good air.
Yes, we know what foul means. You are a really not good president. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I think you understated it. I think it's not very bad news in the Arctic. I think it's very, very bad news in the Arctic.
Okay, we'll take it. The Arctic is in bad shape, and that has global consequences in faster sea level rise, faster global warming, and more extreme weather. That's according to the latest Arctic report card out this week, an annual update on changes in the Arctic issued by NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. NOAA finds that the Arctic has lost 95% of its oldest, thickest sea ice, which is severely impacting land and marine species. 2018 will likely be the second hottest year in the Arctic after 2016, and the five warmest years on record in the Arctic have all occurred in just the last 5 years.
Just to be clear, you said that 95% of the old Arctic ice has been melted.
Right. In a press conference, NOAA scientist Emily Osborne explained that what happens in the Arctic doesn't stay in the Arctic.
What we're seeing is that the Arctic is warming at twice the rate as the rest of the globe. That results in a change in the pattern of our jet stream, and the jet stream is impacting our weather throughout the year.
Impacts include extreme weather that stalls in place, like record drought in the west, or extreme rainfall events like Hurricane Harvey. The rapidly disintegrating sea ice is also attracting shipping traffic and mining interests to the region, and therefore more pollution. The Arctic now has more microplastic pollution than any other ocean basin. Report co-author Don Perovich summed up the dire report.
One of the big takeaways from this year is it really shows how interconnected things are, how the Arctic is a system, and we're really starting to see cascading effects that we don't fully understand.
Not only cascading effects, but feedback loops. As the white ice disappears, It's replaced by darker water and land, which absorbs heat from the sun instead of reflects it back.
And that, in turn, creates even more warming that melts even more ice.
Yeah. Right. This is very bad.
Yes, it is.
In other news, the Trump Environmental Protection Agency this week proposed rolling back yet another major Obama-era public health standard, the Waters of the United States rule that protected waterways and wetlands that feed into the drinking water supply of one-third of Americans. It was aggressively opposed by Republican state attorneys general and some folks in the agriculture, real estate, and oil industries, and golf course owners like President Trump.
Huh.
In a press conference, this is how Acting Administrator Andrew Wheeler characterized the Obama standard.
They claimed it was in the best interest of water quality, but it was really about power. Power in the hands of the federal government over farmers, developers, and landowners.
Also, an EPA spokesman claimed that the agency had no data on the impact of the rollback, but E&E News, via a public records request, obtained that data that doesn't exist, showing the agency determined 20% of streams and 50% of wetlands would lose protection under the new rule. This is a proposed rule. The public comment period is now open at regulations.gov. and it will likely face years of litigation.
Good.
In the United States Senate, Democratic Minority Leader Chuck Schumer has granted the top spot on the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee to Joe Manchin of West Virginia.
Bad.
A major supporter of the coal industry.
Unreal.
And the committee's highest ranking member. This after midterm election losses forced a committee leadership reshuffling. As climate activist Bill McKibben put it on Twitter, quote, "Yes, we have to change everything to deal with climate change, but no, that doesn't include seniority rules in the Senate."
And putting Joe Manchin on an energy committee. You know, for all the complaints about Nancy Pelosi, why aren't Democrats complaining about Chuck Schumer in the Senate?
Finally, there is some good news. Washington State's Democratic Governor Jay Inslee this week unveiled an ambitious package of legislation to tackle climate change that includes phasing out fossil fuels like natural gas and coal from the state's electricity supply by 2045. There is no carbon tax or fee included in the governor's proposed legislation. That's after the oil industry spent $30 million to defeat a state carbon tax in the November election.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide, please, on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
The Nicole Sandler Show is 100% listener-supported. Have you given yet? Nicole decided not to put her show behind a paywall, knowing that many can't afford the luxury of paying for a podcast. But if you're able to, she needs your financial support to continue doing this. Consider a monthly subscription. Give when you can. Just visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. Remember, she can't do this without you.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTierney.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Yes, every Thursday we get together with Howie Klein to, talk about whatever's happening. Hey, Howie.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi. For like 2 years now, before we get into, you know, the serious stuff, for a couple of years now, you've been talking about Donald Trump and the way he always is snorting. And you've said that he's snorting Adderall, right? I mean, you've said that, yes, on this show before. Have you heard about this guy who worked on The Apprentice and is now a comedian?
No.
Okay. So there's a guy named Noel Kassler, who worked as an apprentice staffer for 6 years. His job was dealing with the talent. Like, he was in charge of taking care of, Jared and Ivanka and the family, and that was his thing. Well, he's now working as a stand-up comedian, and there's a clip posted on the internet with him, and I just want to play you this clip of it because I think you'll get a kick out of it. So this is the guy, Noel Kassler, who worked on The Apprentice for 6 years.
He's a speed freak.
Talking about Trump.
He crushes up his Adderall and he sniffs it because he can't read, so he gets really nervous when he has to read cue cards. I'm not kidding. This is true. I had a 24-page NDA, non-disclosure agreement. I didn't know then he was becoming president. Now it's, no way, dumbass. I'm telling you everything I know. So he gets nervous and he crushes up these pills. That's why he's sniffing when you see him in debates and when you see him reading. That's why he's tweeting. You know, it's like he's out of his mind. It makes sense if you think about it. Methamphetamine was invented by the Nazis to keep the fighter pilots up all night on bombing runs, right? So it makes sense that Trump would use it to hate tweet and the self-centered rage at 4 a.m. on the toilet. Right?
Anyway, so that's where he addressed the Adderall sniffing allegation. I thought you'd get a kick out of it.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't know if I ever mentioned it on the show or not, but the information, the way I know about this is because a friend of mine bought the company that where Trump gets his cosmetic surgery done.
Ooh.
In West Palm Beach. So he got his hands on all the records and immediately told me what was going on with some of Trump's health situations. There's more, you know, there's also a New York doctor who I've been hearing from. But the one about the Adderall, the doctors at this practice, at this cosmetic surgery practice in West Palm, they taught him how to chop it up and crush it up and snort it. He didn't know that before, and they showed him how to do it. And so that's why I knew. I mean, when everyone was saying, "Oh, he's snorting coke," you know, during, I knew it wasn't coke. I knew it was Adderall.
Wow. Tom Arnold, who was on The Apprentice, who I guess even has a TV show, Hunting for the Trump Tapes or something like that, he retweeted a tweet about this guy with the video embedded in it, and says he knows for sure also that Trump was snorting Adderall. I guess there's no way to force him, but someone should have him take a drug test.
Yes, they should.
Yes, they should. So, Howie, I had the news. I'm sorry, what?
He's the president.
I know. Hopefully not for too much longer. It's been an eventful week so far. I did the story earlier about the five Democrats who voted for this provision in the Farm Bill, a rule that I guess Paul Ryan added in at the last minute that precludes the House from taking up any discussion of pulling out of Yemen for the rest of this session of Congress, which lasts until the end of the year. The vote on it was 206 to 203. So if these five so-called Democrats hadn't voted for it, the thing would have gone down to defeat.
Let's just say four of the Democrats hadn't voted for it.
Okay.
The reason I'm bringing up four is because one of the Democrats, Collin Peterson, in Minnesota, uh-huh, is in a gigantically Republican district.
Okay.
So if he does anything that calls attention to himself opposing Trump or opposing Republican policy, he's in trouble. So he's always voting with the Republicans. So let's like take him out of this thing, because the other four Democrats are all in huge Democratic districts. So just as an example, David Scott, he's a blue dog Democrat in Georgia. His district, D plus 20. I mean, just think about that for a minute. No Republican is going to, they don't even run against him. I mean, you know, there's no such thing as a Republican possibility in that district in Georgia. In Florida, Al Lawson, another conservative Democrat, D plus 12. I mean, those are the kind of districts that we're talking about. None of them are competitive for a Republican. Republicans can't run in them. And these guys have no excuse for supporting genocide. I mean, you know, I mean, Collin Peterson, he won't say it, but he could say, look, I can't do it because my district is so red and I'll get in trouble. They'll defeat me. You know, not that I think that's an excuse, but
right,
that's an excuse he can use.
Yeah, but
whereas
did you...
with the other four Democrats, they have no excuse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what can they say? I love genocide. I want to see more children being killed.
It makes no sense at all. But Collin Peterson actually explained his vote. Jeff Stein of The Washington Post, did you hear about this exchange?
I read it. Yes, absolutely. He said basically he doesn't know anything about it. I don't know anything about Yemen.
Right. The reporter said, do you have any thoughts about the war in Yemen? And Peterson said, I don't know a damn thing about it, and it shouldn't be in there. It didn't do anything anyway. And the reporter asked, what do you mean by that? And Peterson said, all it did say was that they couldn't have a vote or something. Didn't authorize anything. It didn't, you know, our party gets off on tangents. It's ridiculous.
Well, the Senate is debating it right now.
Yes, they are.
Presumably, there's going to be this afternoon, they're going to pass Bernie's bill.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bipartisan bill that Bernie got Mike Lee of Utah to sign on with.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of other, one other Republican, Rand Paul, and another Democrat.
Chris Murphy. Yep.
So it's a bill from all four of them, although it's Bernie's bill.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to pass with a big bipartisan majority today. And so the idea was the House passes it, the Senate passes it, and then Trump is under pressure to sign it. And now that whole plan is, you know, screwy because the House can't even vote on it. I don't know for sure that, Ryan is getting the blame, and he certainly, it couldn't have happened without him,
mm-hmm,
But what I'm hearing is that the blame is also, at least partially, with Pete Sessions.
Huh.
So Pete Sessions is a right-wing Republican from the Dallas area, and he was defeated in November. And he's leaving politics, and this is his way out, condemning thousands of more Yemeni children and other civilians to death.
It's
very
sickening.
Nice.
Absolutely
he's the chairman
sickening.
Of the Rules Committee who put that in.
Are Pete Sessions and Jeff Sessions related?
Only spiritually.
They seem so much alike. I just figured they were brothers or something. I guess not. I played a Bernie did a whole Facebook Live video earlier today talking about the vote that's coming up. And so I played a few minutes of that. So if the House can't vote on this, if the Senate passes it, which it looks like they will today, it should go back to the House and then to the president's desk. But if the House can't vote on it, then it dies. Because at the end of the year, this is the end of the 115th Congress. When they come back in January, that's the start of the 116th, and nothing rolls over. So they'd have to reintroduce it in the Senate again, which they've done before, so they can do it again.
It could pass in the Senate again, maybe.
Yeah,
but remember, the
tougher.
Senate is a little bit redder next time.
That's right.
And then the House will pass it next time, easily. There's not going to be any problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
But then, then Trump calls McConnell and says, don't let this come up for a vote.
Vermont Gina in the chat room just wrote, passed the Senate just now. Thank you, Bernie, Lee, and Murphy. I guess mm-hmm. Rand Paul, too. So it passed
Rand
the Senate. Then we wait and see, I guess, what happened. But 206 to 203 or whatever it was, the House can't take it up, according to this rule.
Right. And like I said, the House will pass it next year.
Mm-hmm.
But then the problem is going to be with the Senate. Whether McConnell will block it, and which he can do, he will block it from being voted on again.
Right. Ugh, it's never easy. So, Howie, I got to ask what you thought about the big meeting in the Oval Office earlier this week. I was impressed with Nancy.
My favorite. Yeah, I was impressed with Nancy too. But my favorite thing was, I trying to imagine what the discussion was between Trump and Pence before they walked into the Oval Office. I mean, did Trump just say to him, do not open your damn mouth?
Or your eyes.
That must have been what Trump did.
Take a nap if you want. Just don't say anything.
Don't say anything. I mean, Pence looked like such a fool that, it's just unbelievable. I mean, not even a one word.
Nope.
I mean, he's just sitting there like he's like a rubber doll.
Yeah, or the memes that grew out of it were hysterical, too. The elf on the shelf and all the stuff that people came up with. That's the one, good thing about the Internet is people get creative with memes. And
we have a very good one as well it's a GIF, or GIF, so it's like a moving one.
Uh-huh.
And it's Pence sitting there as a robot. But, you can see the lights flicking on and off as a robot. I have it up on my blog in a couple of places already. It's very cute.
Okay. I don't know how I didn't see it earlier, but I'll look again. The blog is at downwithtyranny.com. So you have another piece. I guess it's not up yet. It'll go up either later today or tomorrow about the Cook political report.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Let me just start with a little bit of history.
Okay.
I'm not going to go way, way back into history, which could be done.
Uh-huh.
I'm just going to go back a year or so.
Okay.
At this moment in the 2018 cycle, so very, very early in the 2018 cycle, the very, very start of it, the people at Cook estimated that the Democrats could possibly take 6 or 7 seats away from the Republicans, but they didn't even get near the idea of like winning the House back. They didn't think that could happen. They said
wow.
6 or 7 seats could be won, but not double digits. And that's because they didn't recognize, not just on that moment, but for the whole cycle until the very end, they didn't realize that this, what a wave is and that the wave is coming. people would look at the Democratic Party and say, well, it's a blue wave cannot happen. And I don't disagree with that. The Democrats are too lame to have a blue wave. But what could happen is an anti-red wave. And from the very, very beginning of that cycle, it was clear that there was an anti-red wave. And, you know, you could call it a blue wave if you want to. It's silly because the Democrats don't do anything to engender a blue wave. But anti-red wave, that's from the people and from the media. And that's what was going to happen. They didn't recognize that. So now, bring it forward 2 years, and now they're saying the Democrats could win 4 seats. So what I wrote about in my post was that I'm comparing this to the 2006 and the 2008 cycle. So the 2006 was a midterm, and the Democrats won, I don't remember how many, 30 some odd seats. I have it in my story, but I can't remember off the top of my head. So they won, let's just call it 36 seats.
Okay.
Or 27, no, it was 27 seats, I think that's what they won. And then, and that was the blue wave. Then along comes the presidential 4 years later, or 2 years later in 2008, and the wave extends, and they win another 20 some odd seats. So that's how this kind of a wave works. That was also an anti-red wave in that time. Now I think the same thing is going to happen again. Here we are in a midterm, the 2018 midterm. And the Democrats won 40 seats. That's big. That's huge.
It's huge.
So they won 40 seats.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going through every seat in the country that the Republicans have, and of course Cook did as well. Cook went through the same thing as I did, and their prediction is that the Democrats can win 4 seats in 2020, and that the Republicans can win about 20 seats back from the Democrats.
Really?
They don't understand what a wave is. Even the worst Democrats are going to keep their seats. Democrats who I wish would lose their seats are going to hold on to them because there's going to be a 2020 wave. And what's that wave about? That wave is about Donald Trump. Duh.
Yeah.
Remember him?
I do.
The only way that the Cook thing works is if there was no Donald Trump. They just don't take that into account. And how do you? And that's what they did last time. That's why they said the Democrats can win 6 or 7 seats. Because if there was no Donald Trump, that's what would have happened. Then they're doing the same thing again. If there was no Donald Trump, the Democrats will win 4 seats. There is a Donald Trump. My own calculations show, now this is before we have candidates, before money raising has kicked in, before policy has firmed up, and not counting is Trump going to get worse? Mm-hmm. Is Trump going to get better? He's not going to get better. Of course he's going to get worse or not. His popularity is built in, and it ticks down every now and then. It ticks down, and you can count on him. He's going to be 74 years old then, and he's not going to throw away 74 years of being an asshole.
Right.
He's going to still be an asshole.
No, he's not going to change. There's nothing about him that's going to change. He's set in his ways.
So under those circumstances of him not changing, even before we know who the candidates are, there are a minimum of 50 seats that numerically the Democrats can take back. Now, do I think they're going to take 50 seats? No. I'm just saying they can take 50 seats. Every one of those 50 seats should be seriously contested. There are others that can be seriously contested too, but every one of those 50 should be. That's what they should be aiming at, not 4 seats. That isn't what they should be aiming at of defending, 20 some odd blue dogs and then winning 4 others. That is not what the D-Trip should be doing. What the D-Trip needs to do is to not worry that much about defending anybody, and they should be going full bore ahead to defeat 50 Republicans, minimum of 50 Republicans.
Right.
Now, and that's what I think will happen. And Cook will realize that also in about a year and a half.
Then how do they get this reputation of being like the big?
That's what I keep writing about. That they don't deserve that reputation because they're wrong all the time. But you think people will remember what happened? What they were saying 2 years ago? No, they'll remember what they were saying 2 weeks before the election when they were saying there is a wave. The Democrats are going to win at least 25 seats.
So you have your own list of the 50 most vulnerable Republicans, which differs from, I went to the Cook Report website and they've got their 2020 House race ratings. And I look at this and I have to say much of it doesn't make any sense to me.
Much of the same or mine?
What's that?
Mine or theirs?
No, theirs. theirs.
Yeah.
No, they
got it wrong. They you know, all of obviously the four that they said are going to switch are in my my list as well. I did my list a week ago. And then I'm putting it up again in a different order. I put it up in originally last week in order of states. Now I'm putting it up in order of the Republican win number. So in other words, the Republicans who did the worst are at the top, and then the Republican who did the 50th worst is at the bottom. That was the way I ordered it at the time. And you see that there are races in there where that you have to be crazy not to go. I mean, there were races where Republicans didn't get 50% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
How do you not go after those seats?
Right. You also have two felons.
Where the Republicans. Let's just take one of the ones I really like a lot. It's a district that it was very, very gerrymandered district. The DCCC has never looked at it. Literally, they have never looked at that district, never thought of it as any kind of a possibility. And because they didn't go and recruit some, you know, right-wing moron to run. And instead, they ignored it. And what happens is a really, really excellent progressive gets the nomination. One of the city attorneys of Austin, a guy named Mike Siegel. And Mike has, you know, no contact with the DCCC at all. They never called him. They never talked to him. They never offered any help. The state party wasn't into it. Even the DTRIP told the labor unions in the Houston part of the district, because the district goes from Austin to Houston, not into the city, but in Harris County. And the DTRIP told the unions in Harris County, do not waste any money on this guy, Mike Siegel. He has no chance. Well, the Republican who is the guy, by the way, who's the author of all that bad legislation about putting children in cages and stuff. Mm-hmm. He's the chairman of the national committee that Lieberman invented. That is over borders and stuff like that. Anyway, he's the one that writes all that bad legislation.
Uh-huh.
He got 50.1% of the vote.
Who is that?
This is a district, the DCCC. I mean, when they saw that, they must have run through the maps to find where the district is. They don't know anything about that district because they just thought it's an overwhelmingly red district. Cook gave it like some kind of like a prohibitive PVI because they don't know either. You know, they I don't know, R plus 11. Yeah, I think that's what they called it, R plus 11. And this is a winnable district.
Mike
would have had any help at all from the DCCC, any help, he would have won that seat.
Was that Texas 10th district? Is that Michael McCall?
Yes, that's right. Texas 10.
Okay. Wow.
So, you know, the district has, you know, there are a whole bunch of counties in the district, but basically all of the voters are in Travis County and Harris County. So Travis County is Austin and Harris County is Houston. But it doesn't go into Houston. It's just really the exurbs, a little suburban, but mostly the exurbs of Houston, and where he didn't do that well. That was where he had his problem. But in the Travis County part of the district, he swept. He just like it was like it's like there were no what happened. Every Republican moved out of Travis County. Where are they? They're not there, or they're voting for the Democrat.
Hmm.
And then he took another county that no one ever thought a Democrat would win. So it's, you know, it's definitely a situation where they need to be looking. And there are lots and lots. I'm just using that one because, you know, Mike's a pal and, you know, I'm not supposed to say anything, but in a couple of weeks we're going to be having an announcement from him. And, you know, but there are other districts just like that where the DCCC didn't get involved or in some cases got involved in a negative way, like in California 50, where they went out of their way to sabotage the candidate.
Yep.
Now, I got some good news today from the DCCC, shocked me, which is the new chairman, Cherry Bustos, fired Kyle Lehman, the guy who undercut the progressive candidate, Amar Campanijar.
Really?
He was fired, I think, yesterday.
Okay. Well, that's good because we were not excited about Cherry Bustos being the new chair of the DCCC.
I'm still not excited about her. In fact, I'm telling another member of Congress right now what I just told you and how happy I was.
Uh-huh.
And she said to me, but Bustos is just going to put her own cronies in there. Uh-huh. It's not going to get any better. You know, it's good that she fired the one guy, but it's not going to mean that doesn't mean that she's going to replace him with someone better.
Right. And you know, I thought, okay, at least we get rid of Ben Ray Lujan, who was the DCCC chair for this cycle. But he was named assistant speaker.
Yeah, but that there's no job there. Okay. That's just a way of, you know, what it does is he's still at the leadership table when they sit down to talk about things, but he's just there basically to vote with Nancy. I mean, she gave him that job. There is no job. There's nothing. There's no duties to it. There's no responsibility. There's nothing. It's not a real job. But he gets to vote on things, and he's there in case the other ones turn on her to bolster her. So it's just silliness.
Now, there was some action in the whole leadership fight, I guess, yesterday, where Nancy Pelosi was negotiating with a lot of the new members, and she agreed to term limits for leadership so that she and Steny Hoyer and Jim Clyburn, and it's retroactive, so the way I think the rule says that nobody can serve in leadership for more than three terms, this is their third term. So regardless, they're out. Is it 4 years or 2 years?
Well, it would be 2022. So okay. It's not really retroactive from the last time that they did serve in leadership, but they would have to be replaced in 2022.
Right. But it is. Because
it's not all leadership. I think it's just the
those
top
three.
Leaders.
Right. Those three positions. And the way it's retroactive is because it shows they've already both all served two terms already. So this will be their third one. And so at the end of this term, they're out. They'd be out anyway because they're all.
It's not at the end of this term. It's in 2022.
4 years. Then the end of, after this 4 years. I guess they go, but presidential, oh, that doesn't even make sense. It's not even a presidential term. I don't know. I'm confused.
Yeah, it's three terms.
Okay.
So this one, and then there'll be another one, and then there'll be another one. I don't know.
No, the way I understood it is.
In any case, yeah. They didn't negotiate well, because if they would have negotiated well, they could have got her to agree to step down in 3 months or a year.
Uh-huh.
But her little thing that she did with Trump in the Oval Office, her popularity absolutely soared among Democrats.
I'll bet.
I mean, it would have been very, very hard for them to go up against her in the last couple of days, because everyone loves what she did.
No, she was great. Because we saw something that we have not seen in this Trump presidency, is somebody calling bullshit to his face. She did. Yeah. She told him he didn't know what he was talking about.
He won. He got a chance to go on, go on TV with the enemy in front of his, you know, supporters. So in other words, he doesn't really care about what Democrats think. He doesn't care about what independents think, which is why they lost so many seats. He just cares to hold his base, which is basically a very, very low education, evangelical, blue collar base. He wants to hold on to that base. And to him, by him, you know, saying his racist crap about the wall, that's what they want to hear. And to them, you know, to you and I, we saw her, you know, call bullshit to his face. To these people, they looked at the same footage that we looked at, and they saw something completely different.
Wow.
Of him, you know, standing up for, you know, white purity or whatever nonsense they think he's doing. You know, that's why that whole introduction. If you watch the whole thing, it was just, he just droned on about the wall before anybody else had a chance to talk.
Oh, my God. Speaking of the wall, have you seen the press release they put out from the Department of Homeland Security called Walls Work?
No, I didn't see it.
Okay. It was released yesterday.
Did that tell about Israel or something?
No, it says, we are building the first new border wall in a decade. DHS is committed to building wall and building wall quickly. We are not replacing short, outdated, and ineffective wall with similar wall. Instead, under this president, we are building a wall that is 30 feet high. And then it says, fact, prior to President Trump taking office, we have never built wall that high. And that's exactly how it is. Not a wall. It's like in broken English. It's just, this whole thing is just surreal.
Right. Oh, by the way, when I was talking about McCall, the guy in Texas 10, that's a committee, the Homeland Security Committee.
Ah, duh. Like, okay. Well, that makes sense. I didn't go there because I thought it was too obvious. Anyway, this press release goes on to talk about all the sections of the wall that has already been rebuilt. and where construction is in progress, which it isn't. It's a lie. So now they're doing official Homeland Security press releases that lie as well. I guess that's a way to approach. You just got to laugh because it's so insane. And watching him unravel, you know, as these new revelations have come out, new sentencing reports and sentencing for Michael Cohen and stuff, I think he's really starting to, well, not starting to, continuing to lose his stuff badly.
It looks that way. I mean, something's going to happen to one of his children, and that is going to be the setup for, you know, the unraveling completely of this whole thing. I mean, I don't know what he's going to do, but he has to do something. I mean, what's his name? Trump. I assume it's going to be Trump Jr., maybe Ivanka, but I think if they start with Trump Jr., is going to get indicted.
Yep.
And then what happens? What does Trump do then?
I think then he just freaks out even more than he's been freaking out. I guess it'll be a thing of beauty to watch, as long as he doesn't take the rest of the world down with him. That's what I fear. Anyway, Howie Klein, we are out of time. It's always a pleasure. Howie Klein, find him at downwithtyranny.com. And, of course, the Blue America Pack, where 2020 is already heating up. And I'm sure that's the announcement you were talking about that you'll announcing sometime soon. Howie Klein, thank you
so
much.
Lots of candidates, by the way. Lots of them. I mean, that's what we're doing now, is we're recruiting good candidates.
Terrific. I can't wait to see it. Thanks, Howie. I'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you.
Bye. And I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.